podcast has changed my life.
That is lovely to meet you.
Yes, nice to be met.
Come on, sit down, tuck in.
This is not funny.
It's like totally. Just another world over here.
That's I feel like Adelaide gets a bad run because there is, in at least comedy shows, but on TV and stuff, I feel like for my entire life, the only time that Adelaide has come up has been as a punchline. And the punchline is often that it's boring, number one.
Mm-hmm.
Number two would be that there's lots of murderers there. That like the crime rates are quite high.
Because of Snowtown.
What's Snowtown?
Well, that was like the famous murders, like in the... And I'm pretty sure they went in... They in the barrels? The bodies in the barrels?
Oh my God. See, I don't know that. I don't know Australian history. It was also boring in school, you know? It's like convicts.
So boring.
Once you got convicts done, it's like, oh my God, World War One, like the trenches were tough. Oh yeah, okay. Yeah.
It's like,
and
hey,
that wasn't even in Australia.
We're going to talk to you about Burke and Wills for 2 hours.
Like, I'm actually falling asleep as you say it. Like there was always two blokes, you know. Who were the fucking...
Two blokes go for a walk.
Who were the botanical guys? Like the Joseph Banks and someone else.
That oh, Joseph another, Banks.
You know?
Was it Fraser? Or Flinders? Yeah. No, he mapped...
Yeah, it's always people who are like, they did a bit of the coastline. It's like, this is admin. This is like, some administration... So that's necessary to set up a society, but like I don't want to read about it like five generations afterwards. Oh, he was the first guy to see a fern. I don't give
Dude,
a
fucking hell. The head of HR in the 1800s had a city named after him in Australia.
Exactly. There were, you know, arguments between some of these towns, and they had to kind of set up a governance structure and sort some of these things out about where the roads should start and end and where some of the zoning should happen. It's like the ancient Romans were putting tigers and making them fight for their lives in a huge gossip. Can we learn about that again? Like, that was last week, and now we're learning about the guy who fucking categorized ferns. I'm gonna kill myself.
Oh, it is so true. Yeah, like the Romans did so much sick stuff. It's actually unfair to try to teach both. Like, they would fill the Colosseum with water, put boats in them, and drown each other.
Totally.
And then comes back to us in Australia, and they're like, oh, Sir Henry Parkes was a mayor and a premier. So we're going to talk about
which is actually technically two different things. So that sounds like they could coexist, but it's never happened since. It's like what you were saying about lies. And if you lie sometimes, but then make it very clear you're telling the truth other times, then it makes people worry about the lies. You either need to do all of one or none. I feel like they should just teach us Australian history or none. You know what I mean? You can't have it next to Rome. And medieval shit. Yeah. And even like American history. The stuff on TV when you're growing up, like all the best shows are like America. So then you perk up when they're telling you about American history because I'm simply going to understand more jokes in Family Guy. You know?
Yeah.
Every bit of that information will lead to future laughs.
Dude, I think you're totally right. And I think it's like we'll get international history through other forms. Mm. But there's no popular culture celebrating Australian history. So
absolutely
it's like you actually
not.
Should just teach us that because otherwise that is not going to be able to be found. There's
exactly.
probably not even Wikipedia articles on it. But like...
God.
Do you know what I mean?
Oh, that's it's so like, brutal.
Every
you
2 years
even
there's going to be like...
If you get curious on a fucking whim. If you're super bored when you're 24 one night, you can't even have a few clicks and know what's going on.
Oh, but I mean... But like... All that Adelaide... The thing about Adelaide, you're totally right about the punchline thing. It is unfair. But like... Adelaide people are so down. Like, I don't understand it because my Uber driver the other day was like, he goes, I'll tell you what, the secret's out about Adelaide because of COVID. Everyone's been coming here. He's like, the secret's out. I'm like, man, it's a fucking major capital city in Australia. It's like people know about Adelaide.
Yeah, and they're laughing at you because it sucks, but it doesn't. I'm with them. I mean, if the secret's out that it's good, then that's good. I suppose he probably is seeing just a lot of kind of immigration from, or, you know, people visiting because it's like legally the only place they could possibly go. So I don't know if that counts as like people finding out about it. It's just the only place that you are literally allowed to visit. I've only ever been there though during Fringe and I've always found it very exciting because it's like this big festival.
It's unreal, yeah.
The second biggest Fringe festival in the world after Edinburgh. It takes over the whole city. I find it very... exciting, but then you talk to locals and they're like, during the other times of the year it's fucking boring. But it's like, stand up for yourself. No one's gonna start the hype if not you. They need to be more like this cab driver.
Totally. The cab driver was real Team Adelaide. But he was from Broken Hill originally, so I don't know.
I mean, yeah,
you know, he's still moving. I saw a guy smoking a crack pipe on Hindley Street.
See, this is what we need, a bit of fun. A bit of action.
Yeah, you really get, like, you get amongst it. But you're not coming this year. You're just going straight to Melbourne Comedy Festival.
I know, I forgot to sign up or something. It was years ago that he had to sign up for Adelaide. I didn't even know if it was going to happen. I feel like the other example of people who get a rough trot in Australia is Tasmanians. Because I feel like they're the main punchlines on, like, Australian TV. Adelaide for being killers, probably because there's a snow town thing, and boring. Those are the two big ones. And then Tasmania, I suppose, boring as well, backward, and like the classic hacky joke is that they're fucking their brothers and sisters.
Mm, now, that's not hack. That's a good observation,
I think. Oh, you like that one?
Often imagine that just formed from an observation. Like, that was just one guy's observation. People were like, oh my God, I've never thought about
that. I mean, most hacky jokes did start with a kernel of truth and that they were kind of like, based on some reality, and that's why they take off. I suppose most small places, the incidence of sex between brothers and sisters or cousins is probably bigger in smaller communities, right?
You'd have to think, yeah.
Per capita.
But that doesn't make it right, Tom.
No. And I would also say that at no point in anything I said was I making the case that it was right or sexy or good.
You
or
were
sweet.
Talking, I can see on the background, you're Googling small towns.
Exactly. House prices. Mm, very interesting. Me and my sister could benefit from a year off.
We could share a house to somehow try to help pay for these expensive property prices.
It's an investment. A good small community. Some of these flood-riddled communities, they need our help. They need us out there.
Let's get up there.
The prices are low.
Perfect place.
You know what? The tolerance for certain things is very high.
Yeah, when your house is flooding, you don't care if the neighbours are fucking each other and their brother and sister.
So I feel like maybe there was a bit of a kernel of truth, but I also do feel like it's sad to see these smaller places fall into these, because I feel like it starts off with maybe some truth behind it and a simple joke. Just like lots of places have jokes about them. Most towns you go to, the town down the road, they've got a joke about them, and then the other town has a joke about the other one. Like, everyone's joking around, but then some of them go kind of viral within the culture. And those are the two biggest ones. Like Perth, you don't hear as many kind of specific jokes about. Darwin, Brisbane. I suppose Melbourne's got like coffee. Or whatever, but that's so much better than incest. Like, it's
so much better than incest.
Like 100 times a better stereotype.
It's crazy that they haven't, and maybe they have, like the government invested money to somehow change, like.
But then how would you do that? Because I feel like this is the thing about when people have negative stereotypes about you, and we learnt this all. I mean, most people learnt it in high school, right? If you come out publicly, let's say the Premier of Tasmania held a press conference and said, we will not stand for these jokes about us having two heads because our parents were brother or sister or cousins or related in some way and that we're incest people down here. It's not funny. It's not acceptable. It's hurting our tourism. And please,
it upsets my sister / wife.
Okay. That would be a good way to go.
That
then
would
it's
kill
like,
if he did that joke.
Then it's like owning the joke, you know what I mean? It's like, oh, they're pretty cool down there. You know, an incest guy wouldn't make a joke like that. I think that's how you got to play it, because if you make it clear that it upsets you, people go further with the joke.
Yeah, they'll bully you further. But they could like play the classic whoever smelt it, dealt it line. It's just like, what? Like, do you know what? It's probably like Melbourne or Victoria being like, they're fucking their siblings down there to take the heat off them actually fucking their siblings.
This is great. And I think we're seeing this at the moment during the war in Ukraine. There's two propaganda armies. It's like there's an information war happening at the moment. They're trying to capture the hearts and minds of Ukrainian people, the Russian people, the West more broadly, and whoever has the kind of narrative that takes on the most may win the war. I think Tasmania should be investing money in that. If they, how would they get the kernel of truth with the Melbourne people? I suppose Melbourne's quite progressive. People do talk about kind of pro, like, open sexuality can lead to like pro-incest.
Totally. And you could just do it through social media, just a targeted campaign. Like that is how you could shape. You
at like Brisbane the people?
Generation. Or at Brisbane people. You do it for Brisbane people.
Like whose mind are you trying to change? Are you saying like TikToks aimed at Brisbane people being like, Melbourne, aim fuck their brothers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Fuck
yeah, yeah.
their fathers. Melbourne, they fuck their brothers. That's good. Fuck yeah. their sisters.
That's
fuck
so it's like a fathers. Song. But yeah, you could aim it at them and be like, yeah, because give up on the 60 plus. Like oh, they're going to go to their gone. Grave thinking totally. That the Tasmanians are fucking each other.
There's they're done. Actually That's... nothing you can do. They've made up their minds. Mainland Australians.
Before this.
You can't teach an old dog new tricks, and you can't convince them that people down in Tassie aren't turning tricks with their family.
But these young teens, like, they might not know about it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So do the dances. Do, like, the new catchy songs and then try to shift the narrative to Melbourne people. Hyped up on coffee. What do you do when you're hyped up on coffee? You have sex with your family.
You do immoral acts. Extremely immoral acts.
The coffee's fucking your brain.
It sends you crazy. Don't you know why they have laneways? Very thin laneways.
Exactly,
so you can sneak off and do what? Do what I ask you.
Yeah.
Very, very sneaky.
Fuck
things.
One of your family members. Exactly. Down the laneway.
I think as well, like, we know that each state has their own kind of tourism budget because quite often before movies or when you watch, like, what do you call it? Like, normal TV, like free-to-air.
Pre-roll.
There'll be, like, a Queensland ad or a Tasmania ad and it's all just, like, great pictures of their place and like people going snorkeling and going bushwalking and stuff, and each state is paying for their own one, presumably, like the Victorian state government is paying for us to have, you know, that woman who was pushing the big ball of cotton through the Melbourne laneways.
Oh, that was iconic. Yeah.
Like, what if,
and you know, Ben Lomas is in like a Melbourne tourism ad at the moment. I'm not sure if you've seen it.
Oh, right. No, I haven't. But that's exactly. These things happen all the time. There must be millions invested. But just Tasmania should just do one of those. And yeah, it's like a pro Melbourne one. And it looks like it's from Melbourne. But it looks really nice. Like a woman pushing cotton through laneways. But then she leans in for a kiss. And then she's like, he's like, thanks, sis. And then she moves on. And then she goes on a like a hot air balloon.
Yeah.
And you're a bit like, what was that with the sister? Like, what? And it's kind of just lays the kernel, you know?
Yeah, and then in the hot air balloon, it's like her and her brother went up. There was no, like, it would be crazy to go individually.
Totally, and they're just there.
And what happens up there? The champagne pops. Quite romantic.
And there's just a hand on the small of her back or something, like, as it zooms out and says, visit Melbourne. You're like, what's the hand? He's touching her. It's a bit like there are a couple there. And then that's the first kind of messaging. And then the second, I think... we go with your thing of like social media, TikTok, but the cool kind of more aggressive memes. But now the seed's been planted.
A media blitz.
Exactly.
That's not bad at all. So it's like, you'd be slowly planting it in each viewer's mind. So it's
young people.
Incredibly obvious.
Totally.
But you would just start thinking, it's like weird that those families are that close in Melbourne.
And I think the key
thing
then is...
the risk of that ad camp... Sorry, what were you going to say?
I reckon that would then prevent... So if you see that and then you see a few TikToks... that are like, Melbourne, people are fucking their fam. What's up, fam? That's who they fuck.
What's
down
up?
In Melbourne, that's what's up. Like, you're like, oh, that's weird. And it's catchy. And you're like, oh, that's probably stupid. But the key thing is that, like, a year later, when an older person makes a joke about Tassie, like, oh, they got two heads because they do incest, you'd be like, nah, that's not the joke. The joke, the thing I've heard is it's Melbourne. So you'd kind of dismiss... the Tasmanian stereotype. Even if you didn't accept the Melbourne one, you'd be like, I've heard that before, move on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then these old mainlanders that have had this in their mind for ages about Tasmania would then be like gaslit to thinking they had made the whole stereotype up, because the kids would be like, are you fucking crazy? Everyone knows that it's like Melbourne's are the ones fucking their siblings. And these old brains would be like, what are you, my whole life's a lie. I've lived my whole life thinking it was Tassie.
And then they'd go to their grandchildren and they'd be like, I'm feeling so vulnerable. Like, I don't know what's up, what's down. Like, I don't know what's real and what's not. Like, can I just hold you for a second? And then they'd sit in their grandchildren's lap. And then while they're there, they'd feel their hot breath of their grandchildren on their neck. And they'd turn and they'd just lean in. And then they'd start tongue kissing.
It's, yeah, yeah, yeah.
In Melbourne.
Dude.
In Melbourne, at least, that's what would happen. Because you know what they're up to. We have been paid by the Tasmanian government. We have been paid $100,000.
The risk, though, of this ad campaign is that now, and maybe it's not a risk, maybe it's actually just kind of what Tasmania would still want. People from other states that did want to have incestuous relationships with their sisters would see these ads and be like, we have to go holiday in Melbourne. Like, do you know what I mean? So it's like that it becomes the destination.
Yeah, totally.
It's like the travel point.
Melbourne makes heaps of money from it, and then Tasmania's like, well, they're not even fucking really doing incest. We just made that up. We're the actual incest place.
We've been doing it for years. Ages. We haven't got any money.
Because we always denied it, but it's actually going on. Statistically, in per capita, I mean, it's a small place. We all know that's the truth.
It would be, of course, Melbourne leans into it, makes it like super cool, and like they make heaps of money at it.
It completely becomes accepted. Like, that's the new progressive
of
thing.
Of course.
God, it would probably backfire. Poor Tasmania.
No, they're all right. Dude, we haven't spoken since Shane Warne died. Did you think the country would go into mourning in the way they did?
I mean,
like, even though he's a big part of my life, I just didn't think, though, that it would be like. The ABC news anchors are like,
yeah,
who cares about the war in Russia? Totally. 24 hours around the cross talking about Shane Warne.
Yeah, totally. Sorry, Zelensky. We've got an even funnier comedian to honour. I don't know. I feel like I expected it. I don't think... Because I was out having a beer with a few of our friends when we found out. And we were there with Goldstein, who is American. And didn't quite, I suppose, knew who he was, but didn't quite understand what Shane Warne meant to Australia and what, like, where he kind of stood. And it was kind of nice and cathartic, mainly Huey explaining what I was trying.
He didn't take it well, Huey.
No. It was tough. We were in kind of like a cool Melbourne bar. I told one guy with like glitter on his face in the bathroom that Warney died, and he was like, what? I was like, I shouldn't be breaking the
news. Sorry,
to
man.
People.
I'll get back to you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You don't care.
I'm just trying to connect.
I'm just trying to, you know, I'm going through something. But it was kind of a cathartic thing of like basically explaining what, where Warney stood, and kind of in explaining it, I think someone disagreed with this, but to me, he's what Steve Irwin was to like America, to overseas people. Overseas people thought that Steve Irwin was like the most Aussie guy, but he was a bit hamming it up for me. Big in the United States, kind of a bit maybe. I mean, this is Steve Irwin potential sacrilege, but he's a bit like what Foster's is for the rest of the world. They think that everyone here drinks Foster's.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
But like, really watch Steve Irwin? I don't know. Whereas Shane Warne is like the Tui's new or something. It's like what we actually consume, how we actually identify.
Yeah. He was actually the Carlton Draft.
He was actually
Steve Irwin. What's the Fosters? Makes you think, though, Tom, any of us could go at any moment.
I mean,
man, it's more like you don't know what you got till it's gone. That is what I feel about these days. It's like, I know he was supposed to die young. Like, it was written in the stars, probably.
Yes.
But I just wish I had more time.
Totally. I also think that these guys, I mean, it makes you think about the life cycle of an athlete, because they have, you know, if they're lucky, 10 to 15 years in the game, whatever the game is. And then there's like an arc, obviously, to their career often, where they're kind of coming up, they're getting better, they're an up-and-comer, and then they're kind of, if they're one of the greats, they've got their time on top, and then they wane, and then people start talking about retirement, but then they kind of do, like, they're like, everyone knows they're a great. And so they do a few years of like just everyone celebrating them, kind of saying goodbye a little bit. Then they go into sometimes commentary and kind of doing interviews, looking back on their career and kind of get into like a legacy defining mode. Like, he'd just done a documentary with Amazon, Warney had.
I know.
But like, he was just getting started on that like media personality trajectory, I reckon. Like, he would have had another 10 years of being like an all time fucking.
Well, did you ever watch his. He had a talk show. Did you ever watch it?
No, what do you mean?
It was crazy. It was called
Back
Warney.
In the day?
It only lasted. Yeah, only lasted like four or five episodes.
Like
on Channel 9.
Channel 9, yes, I do remember this.
It was. He would have like big. I think Channel 9 thought it was going to be like the new Rove.
It's so funny.
He would do like a monologue at the start of the show.
Oh my God, it's so funny. Fuck. I mean, if I was in a meeting and then people were talking about that, like, I'd get behind it. I'd be like, okay.
Yeah, of course.
I can see it working. But you can also see it being a bit stilted or something. Like, I think he'd be a great guest on anything. But like, holding the ship together, I'm not sure I trust.
No. He's not the... Well, that's why he never captained the Australian team. He was always on the side.
Yes, totally.
You don't want him at the helm. God, he couldn't even... of brilliance.
He couldn't even captain and they thought he was going to be the next Rove.
I don't know if they thought he was going to be the next Rove, but it was like pretty much exactly the same as Rove. He was quirky. He would interview the big guests when they were in town. He would do a monologue.
That's such a funny, like, for those big... US stars, like the big actors or whatever, they tour here, they're doing the media for the big movie or whatever, and then they stop at a few places. Probably only like 3 or 4 or whatever, and then one of them is like a cricketer hosting a show. It's just the impression it would give of Australia is too funny to like Matt Damon or something.
He was the guy. Well, apparently there's a story, like Warney was in LA when he was dating Elizabeth Hurley, and Warney was at a hotel or something and then sat down and he was talking to, like, I don't know, some big movie star.
Yeah.
And, like, the guy didn't know who Warney... And Warney was just like, whatever, this knockabout. And he was, like, smoking ciggies and real chubby at the time. Mm. And then Liz Hurley turned up and Warney was like, I'm going to go to the bathroom or whatever. And then the guy was chatting and was, like, really flirting hard with Liz Hurley. Anyway, Liz Hurley left and then the guy's manager was like, oh, I've got such a crush. She must be the sexiest woman in the world. And then the manager's like, yeah, that guy you were talking to before is dating her.
Yes. Yes, Warney. Doesn't that stuff just make your heart so warm? Just a guy who not only, dating some kind of Hollywood starlet, but also... one of the best in his sport to ever play, but just doesn't look like a sports person at all. I love the idea of people being like, what? He's an elite sports person. Thank God.
Not even one of the best. Arguably the best.
The best.
Exactly. The one. The best. Like, it's crazy.
Well, that's the thing I think I said to you, which surprised me because I've only watched half of that Amazon doco, which is so crazy. It came out like 2 weeks before he died. It's like, well, did Amazon kill him? Like, it's crazy.
Dude,
it's the best.
They might have drugged him.
Bezos fucking killed him, I reckon. It's the best promo.
It would be
this
nothing
doco
to
ever.
Bezos to do that. Because, like, Warney's famous, but not American famous. So
no,
what does Bezos
totally.
Care? He probably would kill him.
Especially
if he wants to India. Think about India. They will watch.
Oh, my
people
God,
watch it.
Totally. If this gets Amazon going in India. Because I was about to say, I suppose, the increased viewer numbers probably wouldn't be worth the risk of having an international sports player assassinated. But if it opened up to a new billion-person market in India, then
the FBI wouldn't look into it because he's not Australian. Totally. That's what I'm saying. I mean, he's not American. So, like, you could kill him, get away with it.
ADF looking into it or whatever.
Oh, the ADF?
The what? SAS? Who would... No, ASIO. I don't trust
ASIO,
them.
That's right. Man, I don't...
I think we're saying some keywords now that are going to get this podcast listened to by an officer.
That's like most podcasts are like, please comment in the below, give us a rating. Yeah. It helps, bumps it up. And we're like, ASIO.
ISIS.
Terrorist.
Shame
on Al-Qaeda. Taliban joining. How do I join the Taliban?
Oh, we're joking around here, but they absolutely do have that technology set up. It's not even a joke. Undoubtedly they do.
Oh, God. It would... Yeah, look, this... Anyway, it's fine.
Yeah, lots of people assumed that I was vaccinated when I'd never said anything. I think I just have a vaccinated vibe. Maybe I seem responsible to people or something.
No, because you've got like the law thing and then, I mean, I feel like your sister's a doctor. So it does feel like you understand a lot and maybe the medical thing is a thing that you probably understand a lot. But yeah, are you boosted?
Yeah. I mean, I think, but then that's what frustrates me about the vaccine stuff is, I've probably said this before as well, but my sister, who is a doctor, was early on saying the vaccines were fucking, like, you know, a bit scary. And it was, like, early science and, you know, that if she had the power, she
probably would have waited, but because she's a frontline worker, she's going to have to get it. But like, she'd have a bunch of doctors around because that's her social circle, and they were all bitching about how fucking untested it is. And then
that's unreal.
And then 2 months later,
this is now a vaccine conspiracy podcast.
Well, look, I think, you know, the data's now in. No vaccine has been tested more than these ones because they've been run out across millions and millions of people, and like that, there hasn't been anything too scary yet. But
Taliban, ivermectin.
But my point
get
is,
get us on a few lists.
It does annoy me that then other people express skepticism around vaccines, and then people talk down to them like, you fucking idiots, you don't know what you're saying, get in line. When, like,
yeah,
I've been at parties with fucking a million doctors. Well, not a million, like 10, all bitching about how scared about it they are. This was early days. But, like, they were just basically expressing their hesitancy, like a lot of these other people do. But when the other people express their hesitancy, they get shouted down as if you're not agreeing with science. But the fucking science people behind the scenes are going, oh, yeah, it's a bit dodgy. So it's like, don't fucking yell at the other people as if they're so uneducated. They're just being hesitant. It's normal.
But how long ago was this, though?
Yeah, it was a while ago.
This was like pre anyone getting vaccinated, right?
Yeah. When the vaccines had just been kind of announced.
So did like they change their tune?
Kind of. I think there's still a bit of like, it is what it is. Like, they have to take it. If you work in the health system, like, you just have to take it.
But I reckon it would be a kind of thing. It's like, oh, there's heaps of comedians that I'm just like, yeah. You know, and heaps of, and everyone, the general public or whatever, are like, these people are amazing. But because I do comedy, I see all the tricks. That's probably the same as the fact they know heaps of vaccines.
Totally.
And then everyone's talking about this one vaccine and they're like, ugh, this fucking vaccine.
They're like, it's new.
There's a million better vaccines.
This is an open micer. I've heard vaccines, they've been doing it 20 years. They don't get any respect.
This vaccine comes from nowhere. Now everyone's talking about it. It's just not fair.
It's untested. Some of this, it's old. The bits that they're doing that are good, they've stolen from other vaccines, which are better. And the new bits are like, do they work? We don't know.
Do they work? Are they? It's just like people getting caught up in the momentum and not actually paying attention to what is a good vaccine.
It is actually just established stand-up comedians who bitch about people who blow up on YouTube.
And all of a sudden have 1,000 people at every show.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, they're great.
Oh, yeah, they're so good, aren't they? Yeah, they're the new, they're the future voice of comedy.
Yeah, Frenchie's a champion. The new vaccines are the Frenchies of the comedy for the vaccine world.
No,
doing good work.
Frenchie's
doing good work out
no,
there.
No, doing good
know?
Work. I am on board with Frenchie. Don't
get
me wrong.
I didn't see him in the lab. I didn't see him in the lab every fucking week with the rest of us.
Didn't see him in the grind. Didn't see him on the sign-up nights writing his name down, did you?
Oh, God. But yeah, I'm not anti-vax, but I think I do. That's what annoys me about people assuming that I'm very pro-vaccine is because they do kind of associate probably, has a sister who's a doctor and then therefore, of course, they agree with me. It's like, no, people of all sorts are allowed to have hesitancies, not being anti it.
Totally.
Just like ask questions at all. Like, it's all very strange.
Well, that's totally. And also the thing is, like, anything that everyone is into, I would normally probably try to be the opposite side of. Not try to be, but just generally I feel like I would be like, ugh, God, this is all a bit
cringe.
Lame if everyone's doing it. Yeah, it gets so cringe if it's 92% of the population are doing this one thing.
That's why you're pro-Russia.
No. Come on, Tom, come on. Yeah, dude, so we went to a wedding and we were in control of the wedding.
We were entrusted / obliged to co-host.
Burdened, potentially.
I mean, you could argue that. I found it... So basically, we were the MCs, co-MCs. Mm. I'd never MC'd a wedding before. You had. Many times, I'd say.
Yes. Or like, yeah, 4 times probably.
4 times. Fucking, you were a natural early on. You were like, okay, the bathroom's over there. We're going to be seated in 2 minutes. You were like...
You were hesitant.
The announcements...
I had to take you under my wing.
...load out of you. I'm like, is this appropriate? I don't know. It felt weird to just march out into like a crowd of just people kind of sipping drinks and chatting and start speaking into a microphone, bossing them around. But that was the job.
And you know what the part of the job is that they never really... is that you have to play a bit of cattle dog at times and just get people back into their seats and stuff. And that's always... I don't mind standing up and, like, bringing on the speakers. That's fine. But when you're just, like, interrupting people having a good, solid conversation...
Catching up with someone they haven't seen in years.
Yeah. And be like, come on, cut it. Like, someone they haven't seen for 10 years. And you're like, end this. Go sit in your designated seat.
You're a teacher.
Yeah.
You have to play the role of a teacher, which is no fun. But we sorted out a little routine. We wrote a little routine. We did it together, and I think it went okay. We rehearsed beforehand. We went out to the front. This was at our friend's property, not his property, but his parents' farm. And we went out the front, and we kind of were running it because, like, you'd say a bit, then I'd say a bit. Like, we kind of went back and forth. And God, then I was like, "This is gonna bomb real bad."
Really, really nervous. In fact, to the point where I was like, we could throw everything we have out now and just...
Really? You were thinking about just playing it straight?
We could have done a straight bat and not tried to be funny and then just brought people on.
It is absolutely beautiful to be here, and what a glorious day, and what a glorious wedding, and what a glorious couple. I would love to introduce the father of the bride, and then that's just it. I mean, you can just do that if you're the MC. You don't have to do...
Most people do that, I think. You don't have to do jokes. I found, like, it was... quite stressful, the whole process trying to do, because this was the makeup of the crowd was probably like 60 comedians, maybe not 60, but like a huge chunk of the wedding were comedians,
maybe 30, and then
another huge chunk were like ex-Irish IRA, like
IRA old Irish people.
Really not an ideal crowd to
judgmental, like but from different angles, you know. Some people are kind of judging specifically what you're doing, and others are kind of just, I suppose, have like a faraway stare into the middle distance thinking about the horrible,
like,
things they've seen.
Ingrained bitterness, even on one of the happiest moments of their family life.
Exactly. And then, well, I suppose that would be like 33% of the crowd / attendance. So a third maybe comedy people, a third hardened IRA fighters from back in the day, and then a third would be kind of normal people that were a bit more easy to perform to, I suppose.
And I think we did best to the normal people.
Yeah. Yeah. By far.
The Irish guys didn't, like, none of them, I didn't see a single one of them laugh at anything we did.
No, I didn't even look at them. I feel like that, you know, when you're performing, like, if there's a table over there they don't like you, you can't focus on them. You've got to try and ignore. I mean, sometimes you get fixated, but on a beautiful day such as that, we couldn't. I suppose the two things I found notable, one is you did a funny thing, because our main job is to introduce a bunch of people, and I won't say their names, I think, but there were names of some of the family members of one of the people getting married.
Yes.
And that were, I think, European names or something. And we both thought, like, oh, it'd be good to check that these names are spelled correctly on this run sheet that we've been given. And you went and checked with the guy getting married that these were the correct names. Because we wanted to get it right, because we're professionals.
And he confirmed the way we were saying it was correct.
That's it. So you come back. We're like, we've sorted that out. That was kind of just before we went up. That was like a last minute kind of, we've got a bit of nerves here. We want to do the right thing. Then we get up, we do some gags, and then we introduce this couple. They come up to do their speech. And then...
it's beautiful. They do it.
Beautiful. They hand the mics over to us, and then they go down to get seated. But then the guy goes, aha, turns around and goes, no, one more thing. Grabs the mic from you.
From me,
And says, I'd also just like to clarify that you pronounced my wife's name incorrectly, and it's actually pronounced like this. And then hands the mic back to you. And you felt...
Yes.
you felt ashamed, probably, but I think you also felt indignant because you specifically checked this with
the
guy
getting married.
You'd done the homework.
I'd done the right thing.
But in my mind, you should definitely have just taken the loss there. You're never going to see this guy again. It's not your
wedding.
It's so
easy to say that now.
I know, it is. But you went,
I checked with the groom. So basically you're
which,
revealing...
Which, can I say, did get a big laugh.
Totally, yes. But you're outing the groom on his wedding day for not knowing the name of his wife's family. Which
yes,
is like...
But when, it's so easy to be like, you should take the L there. And in hindsight, I definitely should have. I agree.
Yes.
But when you're on stage,
the
bright lights are there. It's all about keeping your head above water. Totally. You're doing anything to keep the ball in the air. And I now I get that. I should have just taken the loss. But in the moment, I just went into the performer mode.
Totally. And it is easy for me to say, because he did snatch your microphone and you had been the one that pronounced the name. So it was
Did you not bring them on?
I think I said it at the beginning. Yeah. But I think you said it at the end.
So I was the one in everyone's memory.
And I think that's why it felt to you like a personal attack. Because it kind of was. And he did like a big aha and then like marched back and then took your mic.
Tom,
like
it was absolutely a personal attack. It was also like, you know, it was like he didn't need to do it. Oh, maybe he did. I don't know. Yeah. To me,
I think
they were paying
for
the wedding, potentially.
Be... yeah. What is this fucking guy's name? Whatever. Get off, mate.
But this is the problem with emceeing weddings. They don't introduce you to any of these speakers. And then you just got to bring them on.
Well, you just say you get a name. Answer. And then you hope someone stands up. That's what happened. We didn't
that was exciting. Yeah, to say the name and then put a name to the face.
I've been told that someone of this description would like to say some words. He's just looking into the crowd. Anyone? Nope, no one by that.
Do you
name.
Think in the moment you would have taken the loss?
Oh, God, it's difficult.
Because you then afterwards were like, you should have definitely just copped it, which I did agree with.
I said
with,
at the time as well. I'm like, go
ahead. Oh, you did, didn't you? Yeah, you, on the microphone. Yeah.
Maybe just don't put the blame directly on the guys who's been married.
Thank God you did. I was seeing red. It would have turned into like where I just start roasting everyone.
You should
change
your name, mate, because your actual name's ridiculous. It's
you dumb fucking idiot. You come here with a dumb name, try to embarrass me at my show.
At my show.
No one wants you here. Boo. Kick it. I call security to pick him out. Kick him out.
I think that I would have. Oh. I would have had the exact same defensive reaction. And I would have been like, oh, right. Okay, yeah. I hope that in that moment before it, because I would go to say exactly what you said, but I hope that I would catch myself, but I'm not sure that I would, because also, yeah, you'd kind of been gearing up for speaking again, because we'd taken them up, we thought they were wrapped up, so you're just thinking about the next thing you're going to say, and then all of a sudden he's back and he's grabbed the mic. It's like, oh, what? No. Like,
it was so instinctive. I've never it was just in the moment. I had to respond. I had to defend myself.
And that's the other thing that I don't have is that in my mind, I was curious about the pronunciation and then you went and sorted it out and you came back. I didn't have the conversation with the groom where the groom assured me that that was what it was. But if I'd had that, I think I would feel a bit more indignant about like just being
And
misled.
Can I say the name? We won't say the name, but the name wasn't like, it wasn't like a lengthy, difficult word.
No.
To spell. It was a bizarre spelling of a four-letter word. One syllable. And there's just... It's beyond comprehension that the way they... The correct pronunciation is the way that they pronounce it.
No, it's not.
Considering the way it's...
Yeah.
You could have showed 100 people, 99 would have pronounced it the way we initially did.
Yes.
We, on a whim, being like, we will just be the most thorough MCs of all time and double checked the pronunciation.
Totally.
No one else would have checked the pronunciation and I still got absolutely burnt.
Are you saying that you think it was on them to clarify, them knowing they were going to be introduced to find the hosts and clarify given how unobvious their pronunciation is?
I think it was on the person that asked us to MC, our close friend, to come
certainly.
Up and tell us that.
Yeah, I think definitely. But I also think it's hilarious that he doesn't know his mother-in-law's name. And that was revealed at the wedding. Like, come on, mate. The mother-in-law relationship is of, like, a famously fraught one to begin with.
Totally.
Learn the name.
But also, it's like, afterwards he was like, oh, I was just fucking with you. That's what he told me after.
No.
Impossible.
Bullshit.
Impossible he was, because who would risk that on their wedding day?
That's so stupid. Of course he wasn't fucking with you. He just doesn't know how to pronounce his mother-in-law's name. Anyway, I feel like we're going too close to the sun here. The other thing that I found,
absolutely.
Though, is... it kind of, it was nerve-wracking and it kind of did make the whole
at least beginning part of the wedding, that's just all you're thinking about.
All you're thinking about. Especially then when we had to go to the side and do it ourselves. But once it was done, the freedom was unbelievable. That was almost worth it. Because then the next, the remaining hours of the wedding, I had an absolute, it felt like the weight of the world had been lifted off me.
It was good, can I say, my earnest reflection on it is I think at the beginning, yeah, you're having chats with people, you're seeing, like, I'd seeing a bunch of old friends, like people I haven't seen in a while, and it does, it is a shame because you can't be completely present, or you don't feel like you're being completely present chatting to them because you're worried about this speech you're going to have to do. And then afterwards, if I'm honest, I feel like I felt a weight off as well, but I also did kind of want to talk about how the speech went a little bit. It was like, if you've done a gig or something, you kind of want to reflect. You, ideally, you'd get a few compliments or something. But like, that's inappropriate as well, because ideally you'd just be trying to connect with these people you haven't seen in a while without a secret agenda.
Tom, there are a few real ones that did want to chat about the performance and break it down joke by joke. You just had to find them. There was a few comedians there that loved to talk. Because...
So
like,
you,
I don't think
you just
we,
found people that wanted to give you the right compliments. That's why you...
They came to me. They came to me.
Okay.
I had... And then I got caught and we analysed it joke by joke.
Oh, that's...
I mean, you
good.
Were probably being... You were probably being much more social. But I think the big takeaway was most people were like... Like, I don't think we did badly. I think we almost did as well as you could do. There was there'd be a few things I would change if we could do it again in choice of material and style. But the big takeaway, a lot of people would come up, and whether they were doing it as a joke or there was a lot of truth in it, they would come up and say, well, boys, I thought you were funny.
Yeah, there was a perception that we'd bombed when we really thought that we'd done as like pretty much the best that we could have
We walked
hoped.
Off and we were like, couldn't have gone any better. And then everyone was just like, oh, weddings are tough. Weddings are really tough.
IRA, you know. It's like, oh, but what? I thought we were getting laughs. What would you change stylistically?
I think stylistically, I would focus more on stories and lean into stories more as opposed to gags at the top. Yes. Just because I don't think there are like the wedding crowds are there for story. That's all they want is stories.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? I think the roast was really good.
Mm.
We did, but I think maybe we would do the bits more as stories. I think that's when we really shined.
But don't you think that the gags at the beginning kind of get everyone warmed up? Because you don't want to just go straight into a story, do you?
When I think they were fun. And I think we had to do some of those, definitely.
You're gonna do a
but
few.
I think I would have been
Maybe
a bit more story heavy.
Totally.
Yeah.
No, that's good for anyone out there listening who wants advice on speaking at weddings. I think just a few embarrassing or fun and nice stories.
Yeah. That's the key.
Hey?
And you'll find the humor in that.
Totally. Because people are listening. They're leaning over. They're like, oh my God, the people that we're here to see, we're getting... That's why people like the speeches, because they're getting a little bit of a new view on this couple.
Totally. I also love at the wedding, like a few people came up to me minutes before we were about to start and they'll be like, oh, have you heard the shitting in the toilet or the...
Story,
in the,
yeah.
Can you throw that in? And you're like, what? I don't know that story. What are you talking about? I'm just not going to on a whim be like, so yeah, one of the guys just told me a story about him doing a shit. Do you got... Yeah, that's the kind of guy he is, you know?
I mean, I think they've kind of got to the punchline there. I'm not exactly sure what the lead-up was. Like, putting a few things together from a few different people telling me the story, I think they were at a pub. And it sounds like he had some sort of reaction to maybe some KFC that he'd eaten. I'm not sure if it's KFC. I just kind of added that detail. But then, yeah, basically he shit his pants. Anyway, it's great to be here.
I hope you all enjoyed that story as much as they did telling me.
Welcome, Jerry. I mean, Gary. Oh, I don't know.
Oh, that's all too close to the bone. But look, dude, I think it was such a success. Hopefully we don't have to do it again in the future, but it was fun.
I think we did as well as we could have.
And I don't want to do... If that's doing bad, I don't want to do well.
That is a good outlook.
A podcast has changed my life.
Chad, it's lovely to meet you.
Yes, nice to be met.
Come on, sit down, tuck in.